Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll. And here we go with the Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan calling you. I'm actually in Los Angeles now. I just heard why Sicilians don't like Jehovah's Witnesses? Sicilians don't like any witnesses. You know what I'm saying? Forget about it. Thank you.
forget about it. Italian imitation was amazing. Bringing the laughs every Friday, though, he is, and sometimes bigger than others. I like today's joke, though, and thanks to Duff for never letting us down, keeping us entertained for years now, 3 years, actually. And not even the coronavirus can stop the Duff McKagan joke of the week. And thanks to the coronavirus, we have the Winnipeggers every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on my YouTube channel and Facebook page. And this week, it's all about heroic moments. You've got two crazy spivaks chasing after a stolen trike, a Canadian run-in with Duff McKagan, and a story about one-hour cheap-ass drinking at the Red Cactus that ended with a heroic wingman save from Dave. You can see it now on my YouTube channel or on Facebook. Come laugh with the Winnipeggers. And don't forget the Saturday Night Special tomorrow night at our regularly scheduled time, 9 p.m. Eastern on Facebook Live and YouTube. Come have a drink with me. Bring your suggestions for the song, sing along, the questions, answer, whatever you want me to answer to. Have a great time social distancing together. Saturday Night Special tomorrow, 9 p.m. Eastern on YouTube and Facebook Live right now. I got NWA Women's Champion Thunder Rosa. She had a hell of a debut in Dynamite last week and a great match against Serena Deeb. Got Serena signed, actually, I believe. And then had another great match challenging AEW Women's Champion Shida for the title at All Out on Saturday. And she's back on Dynamite as well, coming up very quickly. So very interesting story for her. She was just a wrestling fan who had a full-time job as a social worker, worked with a lot of troubled kids and foster kids, gave it up to pursue wrestling. She's been to Mexico, WWE, Japan, all around the world. Let's get started with Thunder Rosa right now on Talk is Jericho. All right, so in a few hours, it's going to be All Out here in AEW, and one of the big matches is Thunder Rosa versus Shida, which is really cool to have here because it's like something that I find that we've done a few times, but kind of we have a lot of... let me rephrase that. We have no problem working with other companies, which is something that doesn't really exist a lot in wrestling now. Yeah. So it's great to have you here because you are working with NWA or that sort of a thing. So
yeah.
As CD walks in. So tell us about how this happened.
Well, I was contacted by AEW first, and then they asked me about my dates. And I was, you know, I can't work any other place because I'm signed with NWA. So I went to the chain of command. They worked it out. And
Billy Corgan?
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, I honestly wasn't expecting it until I got the phone. I got a text message and then I kind of figured it out, and then I got the phone call, and then they're like, you're gonna be an All Out. And I'm like, okay, did anybody ask me if I wanted to be an All Out? Okay, I'll do it, I don't care. So it was just like that. But it feels really good that like in my personal career, like I always waited for people to like see my talent and see what I'm all about before I start sending emails and asking and asking and asking. I want people to see my hard work, and then they're like, I think she will be great for our company, mm-hmm. or great for us to work with her. So that's what happened, and I was really happy about it.
So was how long have you been working for NWA for?
It's gonna be a year, September.
Gotcha.
A year.
So when you said you'll do it, were you like obviously you're excited, but were you thinking like it's a pretty special deal to be, you know, champion versus champion in this day and age, right?
Yeah, and especially for women's wrestling, I don't think in the history of the NWA another woman has gone to another company to the to like fight another champion. So it's a precedent, you know. And I'm all about that. I'm all about making history, making a difference in the business. And I continue to do it either by luck or just by, you know, I don't know, just see it happens.
But that's how wrestling is. There's a lot of luck involved, but you also have to be ready to do it.
Yes,
you
know? And I think I've been ready for a long time. But I mean, I met you like what?
Probably 4 years ago.
Yeah, in Japan. And I was brand spanking you. And now the difference, I see it, and it's just like, wow. And I get to work with you again. And I get to work with a bunch of people that I worked before in different companies. So it's about time.
What's your thoughts on backstage and the whole atmosphere here in AEW?
It's very chill. Very chill. It's very different from all the companies that I worked before. So
In what way?
I don't know, because it's like... I didn't see, in Lucha Underground, we had like five different writers.
Mm-hmm.
And here, like, everybody's kind of like doing their own like story. It's not like there's a writer. Here's the story.
Yeah.
This is what you need to do. This is what you need to convey. And that's it. Here is completely different.
Mm-hmm.
So I think here people are encouraged to use their creativity and pitch it in and see what you can do. And I think that's a great skill for anybody to have, because if you want to do something different or you want to create your own company, you know how to book stuff. You know how to write the stories. And things that will make sense for you or for the fans. So I think that's pretty cool.
And it was cool too to see you work last week with Serena. And you guys had like a real critically acclaimed match. You're smiling about it.
Yeah, because you know what? This morning somebody tagged me about Jim Cornette. And you know Jim Cornette doesn't like women's wrestling.
Hates everything. Angry Jim.
He didn't have nothing to say.
Oh, wow.
Yes. I listened. I was like, whoa, okay. I really, truly enjoy putting that match together. Serena has such a wonderful energy. Like, she's one of the very few people that I connected right away. I never met her before. I've seen her work. I actually told her when I met her, the first thing that I said was, I drove 7.5 hours from Oakland to Los Angeles to see you wrestle with Cheerleader Melissa, because I knew you guys were going to have a technical match. And they had a 25-minute match. And the whole entire time, I was like, this is how I want to look like when I start wrestling. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I've been striving for. So I saw her, I said that, and then we just kick it off. And it was like, when we were talking about it, we were just flowing. It was natural. It wasn't like, you know, sometimes you like, I with some people and you're like, oh my mm-hmm. God, can this be over like now? And mm-hmm. with her, it was just like fluid. It wasn't like, well, I want to do this. No, but I want to do this. It was like, just let's have fun. Let's put a kick-ass match. And that's what we did.
It was a big match for her too, because we haven't seen her on the national stage for years as well. And I'm sure a lot of people have never seen you on the national stage. No. So it was big for both of you guys.
Yes. And I mean, I'm still getting tagged on Instagram, Twitter, all the stuff. I mean, it's been big. And this is what I've been wanted to do for a long time, for people to see the talent that I have and the things that I can bring to any company. Because I work with four, this is my fifth company. And pretty much I work everywhere except WWE. Mm. So it feels really great.
And it's only been 4 years that you've been working?
No, six.
6 years.
Yes.
But you said you were brand spanking new when we met up in Japan. Yeah. So that's a lot of places you've worked in such a fairly short time.
Yes, yes. But it's like, again, it's luck, and people see things, people talk about it, and like, hey, Thunder is, she's a good worker. You know, she has no ego. She'll come and do the job, and that's what I go and do. And I just like to have fun. And I think that's this last year, that's what I've been doing, just having fun and enjoying it. Because you never know, like, injuries happen all the time, and this can be over, and COVID happened, and that's when I realized, like, I have to have fun. I have to enjoy it. I have to make the best out of it, because if I want to live off wrestling, I can't do it in the ring forever. I mean, I don't know how you do it. I see you, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, he's still wrestling, and he still looks good, you know. But I don't see myself wrestling after I'm, like, 40. Like, I want to, like, chill and do other stuff. Maybe have my own company with women and you know, do it that way, which I do have. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I do have.
Well, there's a lot to talk about here, but but let's just go back. How did you get into the business in the first place?
I was a social worker, and I was, like, very depressed. Very depressed. Like, it was a very depressing job. So we found indie wrestling, and my husband is a big, big wrestling fan, and he took me to the indie shows, and it was just, like, fun, stupid. We were, like,
in Oakland,
Hood Slam. I used to watch Hood Slam every first of the month. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we went to APW in Hayward, and that's when I was like, oh, crap, like, this is real wrestling. Damn, like, these guys are good. And there was a tryout, and my husband was like, you should try it. I'm like, dude, I never done sports in my life. Like, you're crazy. And he's like, no, just go and ask for the day off and see what happens. And I remember doing the tryout and being in so much pain and bumping, which I didn't know how to bump. And after that, I got fourth place on the place. If you won, you could get like a scholarship, but I didn't get it. So I went back and I was like, I think I'm going to start training like in the gym first. I'm going to get in shape and then I'm going to try it again. And that's what I did. And I was kind of heavy at that time. We both lost a lot of weight together. And then I signed up. I pay up front because he was supposed to go to university. And we got a bunch of scholarships. So I used the scholarship money to pay for wrestling school.
What school was it?
AAPW.
So I spent a very short time in Hayward. It was called Bay Area Wrestling. And it was run by a guy called Woody Farmer. And Shane Croft was his son. This is years and years and years ago. So I know the Hayward area.
Yeah, so Roland Alexander was the one who was running the school.
Okay, yeah.
Yes.
The famous Roland Alexander.
Yeah, beyond the mat.
Passed away, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's what happened. He passed away and I lost all my money.
How?
Well, because he didn't have anything. He died in the school closed. He used the money for his own stuff and there was nothing for
him. No refunds?
No, nothing.
Wow. And so no one else took over the school?
No.
Really?
No.
I'm surprised that someone didn't try and...
Yeah, I remember we were on moaning after they removed his body from the apartment and there was like a bunch of us. And I didn't want to ask that question, but I had to ask that question because it was, you know, that was my future. That was something else that I invested money in. And I said, so what's going to happen to the school? Nothing. It's gone. Sorry, guys. There's no money. And I was like, what?
How much had you paid?
Like $3,000.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
So, but you weren't ready to start going out and working on your own at that point? Or?
No. I mean, that was like, I was just about to start like training, you know?
Oh, man.
And I waited a whole semester to start because I was not in shape at all. Like not cardio, nothing. And I wanted to be ready to get in the ring because I always have a mentality that I have to outwork everybody. Because I'm wrestling with men. I wasn't wrestling with men.
Right, especially at that point in time.
Yeah, and I didn't want guys to be like, well, you know, she's a girl. She doesn't have no stamina, nothing. No, I wanted to like show them off, and that's what happened. So I went to Hood Slam, trained there for a little bit, but I didn't feel like it was the right fit. And then I went to APW Gold Rush Boot Camp, which Sparky Valor he opened his school in Pacific.
Ballard Brothers?
Not the Ballard Brothers. The Ballard Brothers are in L.A.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I used to train with them like later on.
Gotcha.
But they opened the school with former students from APW. And there were Matt, Carlos, and Dylan Drake were my original trainers. So I was going there 4 times a week after work. And, oh, man, it was very challenging. But I was ready. I was always ready. I was the one that I run everybody. Push-ups, I will do more push-ups than all the guys. I was never crying. Never. Because I was like... Because my husband was used to come with me and he will just see me crying and he looked at me and he's like, don't you cry in front of all these guys. If you're in pain, cry at the house. Here you show that you're better than everybody because you're a woman and they're going to treat you like crap. Just get that in your head. Mm-hmm. So like that really helped me to like get that mindset that I have to make sure they treat me equally, no matter because of my sex. Like it has to be equal. And that's how I treat the other girls that I work with now. And I tell them like you have to gain respect because... I mean, think about it. This business is male dominated. Males make the decisions. They make the decisions of what you are going to do. But you have to show them that you don't have to be a bitch, but you have to show them your hard work that you deserve whatever you need to get, you know?
Mm-hmm. So what was kind of your first break in working?
It was by luck. It was in Oroville, California. My back was shut. Like, I didn't want to go. And they were like, no, you got to go. My husband again dragged me out of my house. No, you gotta go. Don't be lazy. You're always doing that. You always hurt, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, I am hurt because I'm training. So I went there and they're like, oh, the girl that was supposed to wrestle, she is hurt. Can you wrestle? I was like, yeah, I've been training for 10 months. Of course I can. That's what I said. But it was a squash match. It was like 5 minutes. My gear was horrible, of course.
Yeah. But, as it should be.
But it was really fun because I still have pictures from that night. And there's one fan specifically. He has the pictures, his profile pictures, ever since I started wrestling. So after this came out that I was in AEW, he's been posting that like, remember the first time you wrestled? I was like, yeah. So that was it. And then from there on, I had about 10 matches and then I went to Japan.
So was it Stardom that you were there with?
Yes.
And did you live there?
3 months, yes.
Oh, wow. So tell us about that. How was that?
Oh, man, that was tough. It was the first time I left the country, America or Mexico.
Really?
Yes.
First time you'd ever been out of the country?
No. It was incredible. It was like, it was such a culture shock because you come with a mentality of how things are in America or in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And then you go there and then you start seeing things and I'm like, when you don't know, you start being judgmental. So one of the things for me was like how they treat women.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, man.
So how were they treating women?
Yeah, because, you know, women have to be very polite and they have to be a certain way. They have to dress a certain way. They have to be very cute, you know, kawaii. And I was just like, I am not nothing like that. You know? So it was hard for me to like formulate why I should not be judgmental of their culture. You know, not until my second tour that I came with a more of an open mind. And I said, oh, this is very, you know, I'm very Americanized. So I should not be judging them on how to treat women. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're behind, of course, but that's their culture.
But once again, like you said, that's their culture. You know, as long as they're not treating you like that, there's really nothing more you can do.
Yeah. And you know what? I think also that experience showed me like firsthand being a woman of color and not having, you know, the attributes that I saw on the stars that were from America, like big boobs, blonde hair, that I wasn't going to be pushed. Mm-hmm. That I came there to do the job and that was it.
In Japan?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So I was like, all right, I see this. Okay, I'm going to work even harder to like make a name for myself. And that's what, you know, it drove me insane. After I was there for a month, I got a concussion and I didn't work for a month. So I didn't get paid. So, you know, you work and you get paid. If not, you don't. So I was like struggling.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I came.
Even though they brought you over, they weren't paying you?
No, because if you don't work, you don't get paid.
Oh, wow. So there's no like even though there's no guarantee that you're going to work, but just come over and live here?
Pretty much. They give you a couple dates, but if you can't make the dates, you don't get paid. It's like, you know, having. Yeah, it was.
That's strange.
Well, that's women's wrestling in Japan.
Who else was there that you mentioned? That
Nikki before? Cross, that is in WWE. Chelsea, she's not wrestling. Chelsea Diamond, that is not wrestling anymore.
She was like the blonde girl from, was she from Florida or something?
Yes. And then she was a big star. Everybody loved her.
Really? Yeah, she was like cute, kind of a girl next door type look.
Yeah, she was like 19. Yeah. So all the guys were like, oh, shitty she. I always just remember that. Like,
what did they say?
Shitty she. You know, because they can't say the L.
Shitty she.
And she was super popular. And then Starfire. She's a Mexican wrestler.
Those were the girls that were there because we went. How did that even work? We went and sang karaoke. Like,
Melissa ended up being there for like 10 days.
Right.
And then she was like, hey, you guys want to hang out? And I was like, sure. And then
she was friends with Woods.
Yes.
And that's so we went to the karaoke place.
Yes. And it was really fun.
Yeah, that's fun. No, that's interesting. So that was the crew that you were with for like three months. Wow.
And Chris Wolf, I don't know if you remember Chris Wolf.
I do. Yeah. She's retired too now, right?
Yeah, she's retired too.
So what would you do there if you weren't working for 3 months? Like,
I don't remember being... I used to go out a lot, like to the parks and like anywhere that I can not be in the apartment because I get bored. Mm-hmm. So I did a lot of that. And then... I met a lot of friends, so they will invite me out and I didn't have to pay for anything, so it was perfect. So... that's how I survived for like a month and a half. And the last month I worked and everything worked out. And I make sure that by the time I was coming back to America, like my name was hot and I was just working in just like crazy, you know.
Does that give you a lot of steam if you work in stardom? Does that have a lot of name?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
name value here in the States?
Yeah, it did. Definitely did. But I think you have to make your name value because I could have gone there and like completely like disappeared.
Yeah, right.
But I was like, I was in stardom. Oh, my God, this and that, you know, and then like keep working with them. And then they brought the Stardom show to America, and that's when I got scouted by Lucha Underground in that one of those shows.
They had a Stardom tour of America?
Just in L.A.
Gotcha, show.
Yeah, they had three shows. And I remember when they had the shows, I was driving to L.A. passing out flyers for the show, you know, because, you know, I wanted fans to come and see me.
Right.
Because I wanted to show the booker that I can actually sell tickets and I can put, you know. Sitting there, so I can also be a star on my own way. So I did a lot of that. And the last show, I think I brought like 45 people to the show.
Bad.
Yeah, so.
If there's a crowd of, you know, 250 people, yeah. 300, that's.
No, it was like 300 people or something like that.
You know, 20% of the audience.
Yeah, so, I mean, I worked my ass off to do that. And then I just kept doing that. And, you know, then Lucha Underground happened. I wrestled under the hood as Cobra Moon. And that's when I learned that. When they give you opportunities like that for TV, you got to perform. Mm. You just have to. Like, it doesn't matter how green, how inexperienced you are, you have to. And if you don't have the skills, you better damn learn, because they're gonna fire you and find somebody else that is better than you. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, working with so many veterans. I mean, I was working like with Rey Mysterio, man. Like, that's from one. I like the Guerreros. Who else was there? There's a bunch of people. Ricochet.
Pretty big roster for a while. Very talented roster.
Man, it was amazing. I mean, I will just be on the apron looking at the guys putting their matches together. And I'm like, man, this is pretty dope. Like, I'm actually learning from the best of the best, you know? And I'll ask questions to everybody. I will, like, ask the luchadors from AAA to teach me stuff, you know? And that's how I started learning. And a lot of the times, like, I will come early and then and I train with the Ballards and I train with the Santino brothers, with the Lucha brothers. So I can learn the style so I can perform better and lucha underground. And he taught me, like I said, he taught me so much. He taught me about cameras. He taught me about how to cut promos, how to do like vignettes, how to become confident even when you have no skills whatsoever, you know? So it was really good.
And what was your name there?
Cobra Moon.
Cobra Moon. That was under a mask.
Yes.
Because the idea of Lucha Underground, it was kind of, not cinematic, but it was a television show, like a TV series.
No, but it was very cinematic though.
Yeah, cinematic as well, yeah.
Yes. Because you will have your vignette, and that will link into the match, you know? So that's why I was so used to that, because we have our producers and we have the writers. Okay, this is the story we're trying to tell. This is the match that is going to follow, you know, after. And it was like super extra, super out of this world. Like a lot of the guys, I was talking to Pentagon and Phoenix, and I was like, you guys remember all the stuff that you guys used to do when you were in Lucha Underground? I was like, yeah, dude. I was like, everybody was like trying to outwork each other. It was like such a competitive place to work. And I think that really made me like be more competitive and be better and like just really get to a point in where if I wasn't ready, I need to be ready, because all these guys, I mean, they've been wrestling 15, 20 years. They're stars in their own countries. And then they come here and I'm just like, hi, guys, I've only been wrestling for a year and a half. Hi, you know, yeah. And I have a pretty big story. So, yeah, I just learned so much. It was a lot of fun.
When you guys did a match, would they like edit the matches or
yes.
like to be more
yes.
fight scene worthy?
Well, the matches were edited. I mean, if you mess up, like they will
of course.
Take the messed ups. But usually there were not a lot of botches in there. Mm-hmm. Like the guys went all out and they made it work. What they edited was like they put so much tan on it. Like we look so tan, so dark. He looks so dark, you know? But other than that, the cinematic parts, we practiced all our fighting scenes. We had fighting scenes on the cinematic thing. It was really cool.
Did they have like stuntmen to teach you? Or
yes.
Fight
yes.
Choreographers? Really?
Yes. Yeah, it was really
cool. So that had a real kind of Hollywood yes. element to
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah. Everything. Everything. Mm. The sets. I had my own set. I had a throne. They made a throne and they carved it and everything. Oh, my God. It was like one of the coolest things ever. Then my dress, when I was dressed as a queen, it was like out of like this world. And
What was Cobra Moon's gimmick?
I was a snake.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. I was a snake. I was like slithering in there, and I always like getting on the ropes and doing a bunch of ridiculous stuff. And it was a lot of slithering, a lot of submissions. That's what they wanted me to do. A lot of people are like, "Oh, that was so stupid," but just a gimmick, you know? It was like
well, that's kind of was the idea of the place. Everybody had a character, outlandish, you know,
yes.
kind of personality or whatever it may be. So, what were some of the stories that you had in Lucha Underground? Tell us some, because I know there's some pretty
outlandish. I don't know. I remember like good stories that I remember when Ricochet and Rey Mysterio had their match. Like I remember literally after the match, everybody in the back was like crying.
Wow.
That's like, it was perfect. It was perfection. You know, it was the funniest.
What a you know, historical classic dream match that is.
Yes. And it was so good. And then like other ones. Oh, man. When we had to like tape until like 1 or 2 in the morning. Like the fighting scenes. Like there was one, my first one, I remember the stunt guy was like, can you please not kick me in the chin so hard, because I didn't know how to do stunts and I didn't know like people go super light. I was kicking the crap out of him and he was so mad about it. He was like, can you stop doing that, please? I was like, I'm sorry, I don't know what I'm doing. What else?
They had a lot of intergender wrestling.
Yes. I remember there was some like, man, they used to do some crazy stuff too. Like, oh, I remember one time Jack Evans broke his jaw, you know, in one of the matches. Yeah.
Yeah, he might have broke his jaw again now, apparently.
No, he's crazy. Like, everybody was, like I said, everybody was absolutely crazy. I mean, there was also, like, sometimes there was drama in the back, and I always happened to be there when the drama was there.
Gee.
And some people used to get in fights in there, you know, just like, oh, my God, you guys need to, like.
But wasn't it kind of like a crazy kind of contract where you were signed up for, like, 9 years or something?
We were signed for five years or 7 seasons.
Wow.
All of us. Pretty much all of us. And then we had to get out of our contract.
Because at first they wouldn't let anybody out.
No. But there was, then they, well, what were they going to do with us? They didn't have anything for us. So a lot of us, I think it was like 5 of us went to the, what is it, actual lawsuit?
Oh, yeah. Class action lawsuit.
Class action lawsuit, yeah. And then that's how I got out of my contract.
So did you ever work in Mexico?
One time. No, I'm lying. After Japan, I flew myself to Mexico and I worked in the Indies with a female promotion, which I will tell you that really humbled me like big time.
In what way?
The women that wrestle in Mexico, they're not like here and where like you grab the car and then you go with your friends. Like we had to take metro, then the metro, we had to take a bus. And then after the bus, we had to take another bus. Then we'll wrestle in this big arena that only 10 people were there because they don't respect women's wrestling out there. Mm. And then some of us got paid, some of the girls got paid $1, a torta, and a soda.
Wow.
And they have to come back and do it again. And they have kids, they have jobs, you know. It's insane. Like that sacrifices that women do in Mexico and just to wrestle, it's incredible. And again, the quality there, it's if we complain about quality here and the speak out, well, if the women in Mexico speaks out, it's a over.
Story, right? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
So I'm surprised that you never went to like a AAA or a CMLL.
I asked, but you know, that's the only time that I actually ask is like, hey, when are you guys gonna bring me for AAA? And oh yeah, yeah, soon. And I always hear that soon, you know. Mm. I never asked for CMLL, which that's one of my one of the things that I want to do before I retired. I want to wrestle in Arena Mexico. So,
but you're obviously Mexican.
Yeah.
Did you grow up in the States?
I was born and raised in Tijuana.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So I came here when I was 17.
Gotcha. Did you ever wrestle in Tijuana?
One time.
Yeah.
One time. All my family was there. It was like the funny thing. And then we went, ate tacos, and I got really sick.
You got sick?
Oh, my God, yes. Horrible.
Oh,
horribly
from
sick.
Tacos?
Yes. They were pork tacos, and they were not cooked correctly, so I got really, really sick.
Did you ever have any tryouts or anything with WWE?
No. The only time that I was going to get a tryout, I asked one of my friends. I was transitioning from Lucha Underground. Like, I didn't really feel like I was doing anything. I was getting tired of just, like, doing indies and just, like, grinding. Because it gets tiring. Very, very tiring.
Indie work?
Yeah. Because you have to, like, constantly be traveling. Like, some of the matches don't make sense. And you're doing it because, you know, that's how you make a living. Mm-hmm. And I called one of my referee friends. I was like, hey, dude, honestly, like, are they hiring, like, refs? Like, I don't ref. I don't care. I just need a job, man. And then he was like, yeah, let me ask. And then he asked. I was contacted. They told me how much they paid, and they were like, we're going to send you the information. Here's, like, your stuff. They sent me the flight and everything. Then the Hurricane Dorian happened. My stuff started getting, you know, backed up. Back then, I was already toying with the idea of doing MMA. Combate Americas contacted me, and I started training in June. By the time WWE called me, it was very last week of August, and Combate Americas were like, you need to sign the contract now because we need to start announcing that you're going to fight. And I'm like, ugh. And then I was like, okay, I don't know what to do. And then that started happening. And I was like, maybe this is a sign that I probably should not go to WWE for referee, you know? So I was like, I told them that I was not interested anymore, that thank you for the opportunity. I signed the contract with Combate Americas for my first MMA fight. And then NWA called me like 2 days after. And they're like, you want to be in here? I was like, sure, why not?
You know? So tell us about MMA. So what kind of training did you have to do?
What kind of training?
How'd the fight go?
So I thought it was going to be a great transition since I already do pro wrestling.
It did not work out that way?
No. They humbled me. The first week, I was in a Brazilian top team in San Antonio. They're like, okay, so we're going to put you in the cage. We do this thing called Shark Tank. You'll be fine. Just don't give up. And I was like, all right, cool. First thing, some big dude comes and double leg takes me down. Boom. It's fucking, and it just starts wailing on me. Bam, bam, bam. I'm like, I can't breathe. Then 30 seconds, another girl comes, gets on top of me, starts wailing on me too, like putting me on chokeholds. And I'm like, I can't breathe. And they're like, no, this is it. Like, keep going. You got 5 more minutes. And I'm like, literally 5 minutes of getting my ass handed to me.
And what's the mindset behind that?
Because they want to see if you want it or not. They want to see that. If you're going to get into a fight, this is exactly how you're going to feel when you're tired. This is exactly the feeling that you have to fight in order to win, you know? And it was pretty crazy. I just remember having this girl and her butt was on my chest. Mm-hmm. And she was trying to put me on a triangle choke. And I'm like, holy, I'm going to tap out. You tap out and they get you up and they don't care. They keep going and take you down again. And it's just like, they just want to see also where you at in terms of like your skills. If you can defend, and also if you have, you know, the heart to do this, because fighting is not for everybody. You have to be built in a certain way and you have to have a mindset that, you know, that you're there to kill somebody, you know? And so that happened. And that was, for this fight, I was already, I had bookings the whole entire time, you know? So bear in mind, I never had any striking experience. I was a white belt, a white belt on jiu-jitsu. Yeah, I've been doing jiu-jitsu for maybe like 2.5 years on and off. So my, I mean, I'm, you know, because of wrestling, I know how to do certain stuff. But I mean, technically wise, I wasn't very good. So it was an eye-opening experience. Like, I was getting my ass handed all the time. And then the weight cut, it was rough because I was traveling a lot. And, you know, when you get in the plane, like, you get bloated and stuff. Like, it was rough. Like, I remember when we were at Fight Camp, it was September. I have to work for WOW in Los Angeles. And it was, like, a whole week. I had that week, I had 12 matches.
Wow.
And I had to come back and train. And I was, my back was shut. Like, I remember training, doing jiu-jitsu, getting out of the class, like, crying because I couldn't move. I just couldn't move. And the last 3 weeks, it was, like, drilling and, like, constantly, like, being put in very uncomfortable positions. Like, you know, just learning how to, like, just learning how to strike, learning how to move. And my opponent was pretty tall. She was, like, an Amazon. Like, I'm like this, and she was like that. Like, 6 inches taller than me. Her range was, like, 7 inches longer. I had no clue how to cut angles. I had no clue about nothing.
Wow.
I just, like, really, seriously, just got in there. And I was like, she ain't going to knock me out. She ain't going to make me tap out. We're going to go the distance. And that's what happened. And on the second round, first round, she dominated. Second round, I was going, I felt more comfortable. The last part of the second round, she took, that was the only time she took me down. And she was a purple belt. She's been doing it for 6 years, you know. And she put me down. She put me in, what was it? She had me in a really bad position. She was on top of me, and she gave me an elbow, and she cut my face, and I just started, like, bleeding like crazy. And I got up, and I that's the only thing I can tell you I can remember pretty well. I got up after the bell rang, and just saw red, and everybody, I just heard, like, because of blood, you know? And I sit down, and then my coaches were like, wow, and they're like, what, am I doing well? I wasn't even tired either. I was like, am I doing well? And they're like, we didn't know you were going to be, like, such a dog, like, you just don't care. I was like, no, my husband, my family, all my fans are here. I cannot get beat up, you know? Like, other people, like, wrestlers have tried it, and they get, like, destroyed on the first round.
Oh yeah,
you know? And
it's a different type of cardio completely.
No, man, it's I was doing, like, an hour of cardio every day, then conditioning class. I was doing jiu-jitsu, I was doing striking, and some of the days I will do 3 hours in the evening, 2 hours in the morning. You know, barely sleeping, doing all the wrestling that I was doing. It was insane. I don't even know how many three rounds. But the last round, that's what I think, that's the one that I enjoy the most because I feel more comfortable.
Do you feel that you were, like, ready for this first fight? Like, were you trained enough to? So that's kind of weird that they would even put you in that position.
You sell tickets. You have a name.
Gotcha.
You know, I just, let's be honest. Like, a lot of the people, when they want to do crossovers, like, the promoters, they see money, you know? They don't care.
That's all they care about is,
you sell them tickets, you know? Right. And that's what I did. But I also gave a show. I wasn't going to go and get my ass beat, you know? Although it kind of looked like that because, you know, I didn't land as many shots as I should have because I wasn't feeling comfortable. I didn't know how to, like, do certain stuff. But, you know, now I know, and now I've been training a lot more because I want my striking to get better. I want my jiu-jitsu to get better. You know, but on top of that, I have all my responsibilities, and my job is as a professional wrestler, you know? So I have to, like, leave the training sometimes and focus on my job, you know, because this is what is bringing money to the table. You know, once the fights are announced again, because they stopped the fights because of the COVID.
Right.
You know, that's when I'm going to start getting, like, super
serious
again.
So you want to do more?
Well, I am contracted to do three more.
Gotcha. Yeah. So you got a good payoff at least to do it?
Decent. It would have been better if I would have won. But
So that's how it works. If you win, you actually get more money.
You get double. So, but definitely sponsorships are where the money's at. That's where I'm pretty good at. Sponsorships.
Hustling the sponsors, getting
Hell
the sponsors.
Yeah. People were definitely into it. So, and they got what they wanted.
Tell us about the NWA. It's kind of an interesting way they do things. Very smart, unique.
Yes, I really enjoy the NWA. It's very different than, like, all the companies that I worked before because of the style of wrestling that we do is very old school. Like, the set was, I remember, like, stepping in there the first time, and I was like, wow, this looks so different. You know, I've done studio wrestling, but
it's like a studio, old school studio.
And the stories that we're trying to tell, matches are really short, but they go to a point. Like, people are, they're easily understandable, and I don't know. I really enjoy it, and even watching it and on YouTube, and like the transitions and the editing was really old school, and definitely we had a really good steam going into like 2020, and then you know COVID happened, and it's kind of like. Bleh.
And Billy's got a lot of passion too for the business, so
yes.
he wasn't going to give up until he came up with something that he was making sense to him and something regular.
Yeah, and you said it absolutely right. He's very particular about what his vision and how he wants to see the product, because he doesn't want to have an indie show. He wants something that it has like market value.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, he's a musician. He's done so many shows. And he wants them a certain way because that's his, it has his last name,
Right, sure, of course.
And it's representing him too. So, yeah, he's been very kind to me. And he's the one who talked to Tony Khan.
To allow this to happen,
yes.
Yeah. Who do you work with at NWA?
As far as like women?
The other women that are there.
Allison Kay, Marty Bell. We had Melina there, Ashley Box, Camille. Who else? Some of the girls are now... some other places. Tasha Steele, she's now in TNA or Impact, sorry. Mm-hmm. Who else? Our roster was really small. So, yeah.
Who did you win the title from?
Allison Kay.
Okay.
The 20-minute match.
What's that?
20-minute match.
All right.
Yeah.
Was it a classic for you? Did it go?
Yes, yeah. It was. And that's like another one. Ass beat. Like, I earned it. Like, it was, I finished and I could not move. I was like, holy shit, my back hurts. But it was one of those things. Like, I actually... watched it like a couple of days ago, and I at the end of the match, I'm like, I'm crying because I'm like, I remember like the feeling of like accomplishment that I had at like having the title in my hands. Like, it's such a historical title, and like the women that have been before me and that have paved the path for us, and like knowing and learning the history, not only just going on Wikipedia and reading it, like actually reading mm-hmm. books and doing more research, it's just like, wow, like. There's a lot more work to do in women's wrestling and in every single aspect. Because, again, even then, from 1930s when Mildred Burke, it was dominated by her husband.
Mm-hmm.
He was the one running
Billy
the show.
Billy Wolf, maybe? Or
yes.
Something? Yeah.
He was the one running the show, And,
right.
And
you don't want to know the speaking out stories about Billy Wolf.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I mean, they had a deal, Like, she knows what he was doing, and she was doing her thing, too. So, mm-hmm. I mean... It was a time, but I think it's 2020, and I'm very opinionated about that, and I've been very outspoken about that. But now it's just my generation. I'm representing, a lineage of like very strong minded female wrestlers that were before me, and I want to like represent with being positive, being a positive role model, and just to show what women's wrestling is all about, mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's cool that you respect the history of that, because it goes back, like you said, almost 100 years at this point. So yeah. I think that's pretty it's a pretty big deal.
It is a big deal. I mean, you get titles and you're like, yeah, it's just a title. Like, this is not just a title. Like, this title, like, my name is in there. I am there for the history of wrestling. Mm-hmm. Like, NWA is old as hell, It's like, and my name is going to be there forever.
Right.
Even if I was the champion only one day, my name is still there. But I've been blessed that I'm still the champion. But I want people to remember me like, oh, she used this platform to like elevate women's wrestling in her era.
Mm-hmm.
That's why after the Speak Up, we revamped. He used to have a small promotion in Texas, my husband and I and a friend, called Mission Pro Wrestling, and revamp it. And what we're doing now is we're running a show that is run by women.
Hmm.
99% of it is women. In production, camera, ring announcers, commentators, oh, wow. Everything.
What's it called? Mission?
Mission Pro Wrestling,
Mission
yes.
Pro Wrestling, yeah.
And we also, like a lot of people don't like this, we created another area of Mission Pro Wrestling, and we do custom matches, which people are like, oh, well, yeah, that's very sexualized. I was like, well, we need to pay for the show,
mm-hmm.
And we're creating jobs. Believe it or not, a lot of the girls and guys get paid more money doing customs than doing regular shows.
Now let's explain what customs are.
So customs are like technically a fan. They have they want to book a match, and we have a lineup, and they're like the bookers of the match. Mm. So they give us a script. Our talent follows the script, and they get the video.
Do a headlock, do a hip toss or whatever.
Yes, yeah. So it's very simple. it's been done for years, you know, and we respect our talent. We don't do anything that the talent doesn't feel comfortable with. And it's mostly pro wrestling style. Like, we don't do, there's a lot of like fetish and there's a lot of other stuff that we can get into for another day.
The people that get these, they want you to work somebody's foot or something like
that? Yeah. Keep the hair, the hand, like the back.
So
like,
that's where the sexual connotation comes in,
yeah,
right?
Yes. But we don't, like I said, we make sure that our staff and our talent feel comfortable. And it's intergender and it's also like just female. So, yeah.
So that's interesting. So, because I actually know... there was a girl that lives across the street from one of my best friends, and in her garage, she would do customs at Lexi Fife, I think her name
is. Lexi. Yeah.
In Tampa, she would
do her brand. Yeah, and she helped so many girls. Like I said, when they were coming from other countries, they will get work with her, you know, and they will make, you know, pretty good buck.
Yeah.
You know, and they will go home and they didn't have to work regular jobs. So, I mean, having producers like her, it really helped us, you know, to get to a level that we want to get, because a lot of us don't want to have a regular job because that will, you know, be... not good for what you're trying to do. I mean, if I'm trying to train and I'm trying to do this and I want to travel and I want to have a flexible schedule, you have to do what you have to do, right? And well, now things are different, so you can have your Patreon, you can have your OnlyFans. I mean, there's a lot of other sources of revenue that you can create, and you can, you know, continue to work on your dream job, you know. So
it's interesting, like, to me, like, it would seem really hard to follow a whole script for a custom, like every single move.
It's easy.
Is it easy?
Yeah. Yes, it's super easy. Like, we make it as easy as possible. We have a board. When we know the girls are not very good at doing that, we like have the board there. Like, they see that move and they do the move. And also another thing that I tell the girls or the guys, this is a perfect place to come and learn how to sell. So I think people don't know how to sell, and some of the stuff is just beat up. So you're just getting beat up. You just gotta sell, you know. So I learn a lot on selling, doing this stuff, and I enjoy it. I mean, now I'm a producer. You know, we produce and edit and everything ourselves. So, I mean, it's a good business. And again, I want to help my girls in the state of Texas and the girls that come for my shows, so they can have extra money when they come. You know, because it's hard right now. It's hard times, man. It's very hard times. A lot of people lost everything.
I was going to say that in the COVID era, you know, we're all fortunate that we're here working today. But you mentioned something as far as being in the business. If you can't go work because there isn't a lot of shows, how important is the Twitch and the Patreon and the My OnlyFans and all that sort of thing? Is that something that you've been focusing on a lot too now?
I honestly haven't done Patreon or OnlyFans. I was focusing a lot on YouTube.
Because
now it's monetized, but it took me forever. I haven't done my YouTube because I've been super busy. But I've done it for a minute, and you can make really decent money by, you know, having it monetized and people like donating money and stuff. But it's not like a constant source of revenue. You have to keep going. You have to have different ones. And that's what I learned a long time ago. Like, you have to have different sources of revenue in order to be successful in this business, especially if you want to stay independent or if you want to do your own thing. Because once you sign a contract, it's a lot harder to like do what you want to do, unless you sit you put it on your contract, you know, because some people are like, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do that. But I feel that if they're not paying your bills and they're not offering you enough money, you should be allowed to do it, and you should make sure you ask for it. And I think it took me years for me to understand and be vocal about it and certain stuff, because, you know, it's at the end of the day, it's my body, it's my life, and it's my legacy, and it's my future, you know? Yes, I work for your company, but I got screwed over with the Lucha Underground contract because I was so young and I didn't know what I was doing, you know? So, yeah, I got to be mindful when I sign other contracts.
Did it hurt you? I mean, obviously it hurt all of us, but did you lose? Like, how often were you working pre-COVID?
I wasn't working much because I was with NWA. So, you know, you're getting my paycheck. But
you're under contract with NWA.
Yes, I am under contract. Yeah. But our contracts changed, you know, so we're not getting as much money as we used to. We now are encouraged to get more bookings outside of our way. But, you know,
because they're not working either.
No. Yeah. So it hurt me. But thankfully, I am a pretty smart spender, so I don't spend a lot of money. So I had a lot of money saved up for any emergencies like this. And
like a pandemic?
Pretty much. And again, I'm not alone, so my husband works, so that helps. And we haven't been hurting for money. And again, the pandemic helped me to really establish things that I wanted to work on, like the costume matches, creating my website, starting my website too. Like, the first month, I think I sold like almost $2,000 on my website.
It's great.
Yeah, you know, so it's like, just the hustle was harder, and like, now I'm in hustle mode all the time, you know?
Yeah, you have to be now more than ever.
Yes.
I would imagine too, your experience with doing the customs, it made it not as weird to work in front of no people
Oh, no. That's easy. It's easy. That's what I'm saying is, like, people are like, some people, I feel like they get so close-minded and they're like, oh, I'm trying to, like, no, that's weird. No, it's not. Like, now everybody's doing it. Like, when the WWE started doing it, I was like, this is customs. This is exactly why we're doing customs, right? And, like, nobody's stripping. I don't see anybody saying anything. So, but yeah, I guess it's like, when there's a need, you just normalize things.
Mm-hmm. You do what you have to do.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, where did Thunder Rosa come from and the makeup, the half face?
It came from Lucha Extreme. They put makeup on me because they wanted me to, like, reach out to, like, the Latino community. Then I didn't like it. Then I got the concussion in Japan. And my husband was like, you need to get over something. Just put your makeup on.
What concussion did you have in Japan?
I had a match. It was a tag match. And I don't remember. I think I got hit in the head really hard. And, like, 3 days after, I just got really sick. I started feeling really, really sick. And then the general manager there talked to the promoter. And she's like, you need to take her to the hospital. Like, now. She is sick. He called the ambulance, and when I got in the ambulance, I started throwing up, and he was like, yeah, you got a concussion. So after the whole month that I was out there, which Kimura-san took care of me. Hana was my nurse, rest in peace.
Yeah,
she was my nurse.
She was. How was that for you when she...
She was the sweetest thing ever.
What a horrible story.
Yes, it hurt me. Like, at first when my husband told me, hey, Hana died, and I'm like, I feel so bad because one of my friends sent me a screenshot of the last tweet. Well, it was the one before her last tweet. And it was her cutting herself. Like, her legs were cut, her wrists were cut.
She,
like,
posted pictures of her?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
It was horrible. Like, I worked with people like that before.
You said you were a social
worker.
Yeah,
I was a social worker. And a lot of those girls committed suicide. Kids committed suicide. So for me, when I saw that and I didn't send her an IG message or a tweet, I felt terrible when I heard that she died. Because I felt, even if I said, hey, are you okay? You need to talk to anybody. I'm here. I didn't say anything. I feel really bad because she took care of me when I was, like, literally, like, could have died. Because I was by myself. Because everybody went on tour. And she went and came and took care of me. You know, so.
What was she like? Tell us about her.
Bubbly. Happy. She was always happy.
Very pretty girl.
Super.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Like, last time I saw her, I was telling that to my tag team partner, Camille. Or Holly Dad. I looked at her. We were on the train. And I was like, I can't believe how beautiful she looks now. Like, she's just glowing and growing into a big star, because that's who she was before she died. Like, she went to this Netflix show and she blew up. Mm-hmm. And then all this ridiculous things happen. But yeah, it's really sad that she's no longer with us.
Hmm. Do you have a favorite memory of her?
Things, oh yeah. Every time we were like, every time she'll be, we're traveling, we call each other. If somebody sees her or whatever, we'll be like, hey, you want to send a message to such and such? Oh yeah. I'm hungry as... She'll be cursing or dancing, or it's just, she was just funny. She was so full of energy and life. And I never saw her in a bad mood either. Never. Ever. She was very honest and no filter. She had no filter. It was the funniest thing.
She's very young too, right?
Yeah, when I met her, she was 15. And then she just passed away. She was like 21.
It's terrible. 21. It's one of those... people I hadn't heard of, but now kind of doing some research, like, she was poised to be, you know, the next big thing, whatever that means. You know?
I mean, her mom really helped her on, you know, to, like, create that star. And then she just, like, with her persona, with her charisma, with everything else, her, like, wrestling skills, she became, you know, one of her own, you know.
And what happened with, like, she was on a reality show.
She was on a reality show, and a lot of the fans over there were, like, calling her a bunch of names and, like, literally trolling her for, like, a month or two.
Was she painted as the heel on the reality show or something? Or?
There was an instance in what something happened and she blew up. Like, she had a tantrum.
Gotcha.
And then from there on, like, some of the guys were, like, nasty, like, really nasty, telling her, you should kill yourself, you should do this, da-da-da-da, nobody wants you.
Wow.
Like, really, really bad. And then to the point where, this is when the pandemic hit, so she was by herself and her cat, you know? And I think that hurt her a lot in... And she just went through it and she couldn't get out of her head.
Yeah.
That's what happened. And then the worst part is, after this happened, that guy that was trolling her made a YouTube video celebrating her death. This is disgusting.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
I'm sure that guy will pay in one way, shape, or form. Something will happen to him.
Well, I hope so. And and her mom has been, like, humongous advocate on trying to change, you know, some of the loss.
Media bullying.
Yes. Yeah. Kimura has been, throughout her grief and throughout all this craziness, she's been trying to make a change. And I'm super proud of her because she's, like, one of the strongest women I ever met in my life. from through and through, like what she went through trying to be a professional wrestler as a single mother in Japan to now going through this, you know, and trying to make a change after like this terrible incident happened, you know, to her daughter. And I just saw a post, like it was Hannah's birthday, I think like 2 days ago. So she's still trying, and I know she's going to continue trying to her last breath to change things.
When we got off the track with talking about Hannah, I'm glad that you gave us some information about her, but we were talking about your, the makeup that you wear.
Well, it has to do with it.
Okay, because, so
this one, I just did it because it looked good, and then I got over in Japan. Then when I came back to America, my uncle, who used to be a big wrestling fan, came to that show where I got looked at with Lucha Underground. And he asked me, so who's Thunder Rosa? He asked me the same question. I was like, just giving him the generic answer. And he's like, no, I'm going to tell you the story. When I was 8 years old, I was in Tijuana with your grandfather. We were watching wrestling because that's what we did every Friday. Your grandfather got a heart attack while watching wrestling. Mm-hmm. I was on his lap. I remember when he died. I never, ever watched wrestling again. Do you know what the Day of the Dead means, right? It's remembering people that were here, you know, and we remember in a happy way. This was meant to be. You were meant to be a wrestler because it was in your destiny, because of your ancestors, of what happened, because we used to love Lucha Libre. And now you're representing all of those who passed, and you're bringing them to life in the ring. Mm. That's who Thunder Rosa is. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah.
It's a good backstory for you.
Yes. And ever since then, like, it's the Thunder Rosa is a beacon of hope for those that, you know, didn't make it. Like, I worked with a lot of kids in group homes, and some of them got murdered by the police. Some of them committed suicide.
Oh,
and
gosh. Before
I started wrestling, I used to tell them about wrestling and how I was going to become a star, and how I'm like, not, I was going to let nothing stop me from doing that. Just to like encourage them that doesn't matter what problems you have or what issues you're going through, you can still make it. And there's been occasions in where there was one kid that I want to mention, Oscar. I used to work with him and his family very closely, and he got murdered by the police. But when he was dying, he said that he was a warrior, and I'm a warrior, you know. I fight for those who didn't make it, you know.
That's a great motivation, great inspiration.
Yeah, that's why I never give up, Chris. Like, it doesn't matter how difficult things get or how much shit I get or politics or, like, you know, heartbreaks, I can't give up. If I give up, I'm giving up on everybody that believe in me. And I still do that. Still, to this day, some of the kids that I work with, they follow me on Instagram. They send me messages on how I continue to inspire them.
Mm-hmm.
Co-workers, people that I lived in Mexico, people that I haven't talked to in years, like people that they haven't really done anything. And I inspire them to, like, pick up the weights, to go and walk, to like change their lifestyle because they see me working and grinding so hard, and they see the passion that I have for professional wrestling and just for life in general.
Last few questions. Obviously, you're excited about today and working this match with Shida.
Yes.
Have you had any? Have you worked with her before in Japan anywhere?
No, I saw her in Japan perform multiple times, and I've seen her, you know, on YouTube and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So no, I have not.
It's going to be exciting, though. I'm really looking forward to it.
It is going to be exciting, and I'm really excited. I am. This is a culmination of a lot of things that I've done. And this is the biggest thing I've done in a while, and I know it won't be the last. I just get very emotional because once you grind and once you, like I said, you go through so many heartaches and you go through so many things, and then you see this and you see your face and you see like the last match on Wednesday and how people talk about it. I am very proud of all the work that I've done. I am very proud of all the sacrifices that me and my family have to go through to be here today. And, you know, if it's the last time, you know what? I enjoy every single moment coming to this, no matter what happened today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know I made all of those who have been with me from day one very, very proud.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm crying.
It's no, I mean, that's real emotion. It's actually, you know, it's inspirational and enlightening to see how us being here means so much to you. It means so much to all of us. Like I said earlier, I'm so thankful that we have a job still.
Yes.
One, but
yes.
Two, we are giving people who have lost their jobs or have nothing to do or losing their minds because they're locked down. We're giving them a weekly beacon of light.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, Dynamite is coming up. I'm so excited. You know.
Yeah. I mean, wrestling was my skate. Mm-hmm. When I was working, when I had a regular job.
Mm-hmm.
It was the thing that I look the most forward every once a month, you know, mm-hmm. And now people, it's what I do for them too. So it's, man, it's super incredible. And being a female and having that is not like, because, you know, guys, I was like, you always talk about Hulk Hogan and The Rock or, you know, Steve Austin. I was like, no, oh, Thunder Rosa. I want to see Thunder Rosa fight. You know, I was like, yeah, hell yeah, man. That's all about. Like, I want people to see me as a wrestler, not as a female wrestler, as a freaking wrestler.
Yeah, as a legit top drawing wrestler.
Yes. And I'm going to put myself over. There was like, the ratings were pretty high on our match.
Yeah, you did good.
Yes.
That's good that you know that. You should know that for sure.
Oh, I know all about impressions, you know, all that, man. Like I said, this is a business. It's all about money.
Mm-hmm.
And about if you can put butts in the seat, if people are going to buy the pay-per-view, if people are going to tune in, mm-hmm. you know, I know all about that. I'm a promoter too in a smaller scale. Mm-hmm. So when I see and I scout, I see talent. I see maybe I can work with her. Maybe we can do something and she'll become a star.
What's your goal for mission for your promotion?
I really do want to teach our female wrestlers, our wrestlers, the business aspect of it. And mm-hmm. I'm just not talking about, you know, sell tickets. I'm talking about how can you become your own independent contractor, like your own boss, mm-hmm. and not having to work in a regular job and you can still make money. You know, I have a lot of friends that have done that. That now they have their own businesses and they're wrestlers. And like, what was the steps that you took? Like, perfect example, Medusa has been doing it for a long time. It's somebody that I look up to. And she has different, like I said, different sources of it and revenue. They don't really think about that. You mm-hmm. know, we get stuck in like this mentality and we're just like A and B and that's it. But there's a lot more to it. And I mean, I'm a perfect example of like what you can do to become successful and to be independent, you know?
Right.
Last question for you. What's your favorite match that you've ever had?
Besides the one on Wednesday, I will say definitely my match with Allison Kay. That's like one of my...
To win the title?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely.
It's interesting that you said besides the one on Wednesday. How important was that for you to have a great match on Wednesday for so many different reasons?
Well, you know, I said it on the promo I cut the first time. I came here to put the women on notice in this company. Mm-hmm. And that's what we did. Mm-hmm. We had one of the highest ratings in AEW history in the women's,
mm-hmm.
we were blessed that we were able to have some time for this match.
You had a lot of time.
A lot of time. And people saw beyond our sex. They were like, oh my God, this was a competitive match that they haven't seen that, you know? And working with Serena and feeding off her energy was absolutely great. And it was an honor to be with her because she's such a great, great worker, a great person. And we just vibe so well. Like I got out feeling really good about it. Yeah, there's some things that I would have done better for myself, right? Mm-hmm. But we're all critics about our work. But at the end of the day, my job was done. I put the women's division on notice. And now people are super excited about this match, which is the number one job I came here to do, you know? And we will continue to do that. And after today, I hope, and I know all fans and everybody else, and even if they don't, they're going to be like, bring Thunder back to AEW, you know?
Will you come back?
I don't know. If the number is right.
That's right.
I will do, brother.
That was awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.